It's Wednesday, September 17th, 2008, and that means you've got 29 days left to register for
NormalCon 2008.
It's Normal's 37th annual national conference, Friday, October 17th through Sunday, October 19th, at the Doubletree Hotel and Executive Meeting Center, Berkeley Marina, in Berkeley, California. Register now for the conference. Early registrations get special discount pricing. Don't delay. We have negotiated a special rate for rooms that are sure to sell out fast. The theme of the convention is It's Not Your Parents' Prohibition. Over the first 2 days, you'll learn more than you thought you could know about marijuana law reform in our plenary and breakout sessions, which include how the media lie about cannabis, growing up and raising children in the age of legal medical pot, politics 2008, pot culture, the politics of marijuana and
war health. On pot is a war on young
and
people.
What if we arrested 20 million Americans and nobody noticed?
Featuring the top experts in marijuana law reform from Normal and other cannabis-centered organizations. On Sunday, Oaksterdam University presents a look at California's medical marijuana dispensary businesses.
But it's not all work and no play. NormalCon 2008 also presents social gatherings and entertainment in the evenings so activists and attendees can network. It's 3 days of the best marijuana conference in the world with the largest, most popular marijuana organization in the world. Join us October 17th through 19th for the Normal National Conference in Berkeley, California. Sign up online today at norml.org. It's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world. Featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for downloading us. Just want to remind you that it's an important election season coming up. And if you haven't registered to vote, you really need to look into doing that very soon. Most states have a limit of 30 days before the election for you to be able to register. So check with your Secretary of State's office and make sure you get registered. Every vote counts. Now, speaking of the elections, this one's going to be featuring two states that have serious marijuana initiatives up on the ballot. One, of course, is the state of Michigan, which is looking to be the first state in the Midwest and the 13th state overall to legalize medical marijuana. But today we're going to be focusing on the other state, Massachusetts, which is the first state in about 30 years to bring forth a marijuana decriminalization bill statewide. We'll be looking at that in our hemp headlines, and coming up on the weekend, we'll be talking to the president of MassCann Normal a little bit more about that. Also, today is cannabis science, so we're visiting with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, and once again, we've got another one of those studies talking about a supposed link between marijuana smoking in adolescents and the onset of schizophrenia and schizophrenia-like symptoms. It's time to bring out the debunk machine again with Dr. Mitch. And part two of Paul Armentano, the deputy director of Normal, appearing on the Dr. Drew show from yesterday. Paul talks about marijuana reform and how the presidential candidates stand on the issue with Dr. Drew and his guest, Bob Forrest. Okay, everybody, it's time for us to give you the growing truth about cannabis. So load up your protopipe and enjoy your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Massachusetts officials unite to fight marijuana initiative. From the Boston Globe. Law enforcement officials statewide are uniting against a referendum question they fear will increase marijuana use among teenagers and generate more crime across the state. The state's 11 district attorneys are unanimously opposing question 2 and are being joined by police chiefs and some community groups, fearing it will undo years of effort to reduce drug use among teenagers. Governor Deval Patrick's administration also is opposed, according to a spokesman. But supporters of Question 2, who are organized under the name Committee for Sensible Marijuana Policy, are striking back. Today, they plan to announce that they have applied for criminal complaints against unnamed district attorneys for alleged campaign law violations, according to Whitney Taylor, the group's executive director. Taylor said that if Question 2 passes, marijuana will still be an illegal drug. And she said the new approach will increase parental involvement in marijuana cases for those under 18 years old because police will be required to notify parents about the civil matter. She said those under 18 must complete drug awareness training and do 10 hours of community service. Taylor said teenagers would benefit by the change because they would no longer have a record in the state's criminal history databases, one that could haunt them later in life when they apply for jobs. But according to prosecutors, under current law, those arrested with an ounce or less of marijuana automatically have their case continued without a finding for 6 months. And if they do not violate the law, their criminal file is sealed. Essex District Attorney Jonathan Blodgett, who is listed as the treasurer for the opponents, who are using the name Coalition for Safe Streets during this campaign, said, quote, "Nobody goes to jail today for simple possession of marijuana," end quote. Whoa, it seems like District Attorney Blodgett has also never seen a marijuana unicorn. Paul Armentano makes a great point about how, on the one hand, the drug czar tells us time and time again how dangerous marijuana is and how we can't talk about drug addiction without talking about marijuana and how marijuana is plaguing the youth, leading to heroin, and today's pot 2.0 has become super potent and addictive. And yet, at every opportunity, they downplay the idea that anyone suffers any criminal justice repercussions for the possession of marijuana. It's the most dangerous drug plague of all, but we don't lock anybody up over it. Current polling shows support in Massachusetts for Question 2 hovering at about 70%. For more information on the initiative, visit the Committee for Sensible Marijuana Policy's website at sensiblemarijuanapolicy.org. Mascan Normal sues Boston for the third time over food vending at the Freedom Rally. Mascan filed yesterday for an injunction to prevent the city of Boston from denying Mascan the right to manage food vending at their 19th annual Freedom Rally on Boston Common, scheduled for noon on Saturday, September 20th. A hearing will be held on Thursday, September 18th at Suffolk Superior Court, room 1008 at 2 p.m. The permit set to Mascan on August 1, 2008 stipulated, quote, "Vendor food carts are prohibited unless the Boys and Girls Clubs of Boston are providing the food vending services," end quote. In 1997 and 1998, Mascan won injunctive relief against the city over similar food vending issues. The city's unconstitutional attempt to suppress Mascan's constitutional freedoms resulted in an award of $31,935 in attorney's fees and costs. As in 1997 and 1998, conditions on the permit aimed to deny Mascan donations from food vendors in order to stop funding of the Freedom Rally. In granting the 1997 injunction, Judge John Kratzley wrote of, quote, "The tortured history of Mascan's effort to obtain their permit, and the tortured history of 1997, it seems, is still being written today." Bill Downing of Reading, president of Mascan, told us, quote, "We hope the court will tell the city they can't stop people from peacefully demonstrating on America's first public grounds, Boston Common, for unconstitutional reasons. The city is insulting the Superior Court for a third time by forcing the court to instruct the city on the basics of constitutional law. End quote. MassCAN co-founder and treasurer Steve Epstein of Georgetown said, quote, "Whether or not the court grants us the relief we request, the Freedom Rally will happen this Saturday, but I can't predict the future beyond that." End quote. On March 20, 2008, the Boston Globe reported that Antonia Pollock, Boston Parks and Recreation Commissioner, doesn't want the Boston Common to play host to large-scale events that draw tens of thousands of people, claiming such events stress the lawn. Mr. Epstein added, quote, "The claim, events on the parade grounds stress the lawn, are preposterous. I completely agree with the sentiment expressed by Chuck Racina in a letter published in the Boston Globe on March 31, 2008, particularly that if greener grass is what the city wants, they can achieve that by not allowing dogs to urinate on the grounds. Boston Parks Department maintenance people have told anyone who asks that dog urine, not peaceable assemblies, is what damages the grass most." End quote. We'll be speaking with Bill Downing, the president of MassCAN Normal, on this Friday's Daily Audio Stash. I'm sorry I can't make it out to Boston this year, but I hope to be there the next year for the 20th Freedom Rally, which I'm certain will take place because there's no way this food vending restriction will stand up in court. If any of you East Coast Stash listeners manage to get audio, video, or pictures from the rally, forward them my way at stash@normal.org, and we'll post them right here on the Stash.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Narcanon Drug Rehab. Marijuana addiction on the rise.
Is America blind to marijuana? A report by the Office of National Drug Control Policy gave its largest ever compilation of data relating to marijuana.
Though overall use is down, marijuana addiction is on the rise,
comments Mary Reiser, executive director for Narcanon Drug Rehab of Georgia.
Translation: lots of people use marijuana, and defining them all as addicts brings us more customers.
More and more people are getting help for marijuana addiction because the concentrations of THC in marijuana samples are at an all-time high.
Translation: more and more people are sentenced by a judge to become one of our customers.
Marijuana came to represent love and peace in the 60s and has never quite lost that image, but this is far from the truth. Anyone who uses marijuana regularly is more likely to engage in aggressive and violent behavior, cause trouble at school, and destroy property.
Yeah, as anyone who has ever attended the Boston Freedom Rally, the Great Midwest Marijuana Harvest Festival in Madison, Wisconsin, the Boulder, Colorado Smokeout, or the Seattle Hemp Fest can tell you, it's just an orgy of aggressive and violent behavior and property destruction from coast to coast with those dangerous marijuana hooligans. If you believe that, I have a bridge in Alaska to sell you. I think what she is referring to is this.
The great majority of males arrested for any violation in America have drugs in their system at the time of arrest, with marijuana being the most often detected. The rate testing positive for marijuana ranged from a third to more than a half of all male arrestees at the time of arrest. Further, marijuana is the drug most likely to be reported by arrestees when asked about lifetime, prior year, and past 30 days use of drugs.
Translation: lots of Americans smoke marijuana. A few Americans commit crimes. Therefore, when you catch a criminal, there's a good chance he will test positive for weed, especially since that's detectable for a couple of weeks to a month.
Violence at a global level is connected with marijuana trafficking. In California, Mexican drug trafficking organizations with high-powered assault weapons control the marijuana fields, not peace-loving flower children with their beads. Criminal groups operating from Mexico promote their version of love and peace through torture, executions, and other acts of violence.
Translation: violence at a global level is connected with marijuana prohibition. If peace-loving flower children in California were legally allowed to grow their own domestic marijuana, there would be no business for Mexican traffickers.
Marijuana is not harmless, contrary to common misconception. The use of marijuana can lead to health, safety, learning, and social problems, and abuse of other harmful drugs. Marijuana is more potent than it used to be, increasing the problems.
Marijuana has been used by humanity for 5,000 years, was used in this country's medicines for 200 years, has been used socially for the last 100 years, and been prevalent in our culture for the last 40 years. You'd think, if marijuana were as harmful as you propagandize, this misconception would have cleared itself up by now by the mounting toll of social catastrophe. And come on, Mary, the gateway theory? Really? Even the government doesn't buy that one anymore.
Marijuana is the blind spot of drug policy, said John Walters, director of National Drug Control Policy. Baby boomers have this perception that marijuana is about fun and freedom. It isn't. It's about dependency, disease, and dysfunction. As the data released today reveal, marijuana is a much bigger part of our nation's addiction problem than most people realize. While teen marijuana use is down sharply, adult use, with all the social, economic, and health consequences that go along with it, will not improve until we start being more honest with ourselves about the seriousness of this drug. Too many of us are in denial, and it is time for an intervention.
Translation: teen use is down because kids are finding it easier to Google prescription drugs and get pills from an online pharmacy or from their parents' medicine cabinet than it is to find a marijuana dealer. Those pills won't stay in their system as long as the THC to be caught on a school urine test. The pills don't smell or make your eyes bloodshot and are easy to get rid of in a hurry if caught. And they won't face the same legal, social, and educational consequences when caught with pills as when they're caught with a baggie of pot.
High-potency marijuana may be contributing to a substantial increase in the number of American teenagers in treatment for marijuana dependence. According to the 2006 National Survey on Drug Use and Health, 1 in 4 12 to 17-year-olds who report using marijuana in the past year display the characteristics of abuse or dependency. For younger users, the risk of marijuana abuse or dependency exceeds that for alcohol or tobacco.
So this pot 2.0, not your father's Woodstock weed, hyperpotent skunk marijuana is so dangerously addictive that 25% of the kids who try it get hooked, but
rates of marijuana use among young people have declined substantially since 2001. Since that time, there has been a 25% drop in the number of teens using the drug.
25% of the kids just stopped using it. That's some pretty potent weed, huh?
Emergency department episodes involving marijuana almost tripled from 1994 to 2002. Marijuana steadily increased over that decade, surpassing heroin, which remained relatively flat in 1998.
You know what else tripled in the 90s? The number of people we arrested for pot. As for the ER, what they're referring to as involving is really mentioning. Like, if you were mugged and beaten and went to the hospital and they ran a test and found marijuana in your system, that's an emergency department episode involving marijuana. If you're a glaucoma sufferer and you fell at home and had to get stitches in the ER and they ask if you've ever used marijuana and you say, yes, it helps my glaucoma, that's an emergency department episode involving marijuana. We are talking about an addiction here. And it's an addiction to drug war that provides places like Narcanon Drug Rehab of Georgia a steady stream of easy-to-manage clients whose addiction doesn't stop them from being productive members of society with insurance and income and means to pay a Narcanon Drug Rehab of Georgia medical bill. Those meth and heroin addicts are often deadbeats, and those coke addicts, well, they already spent all their money. It's an addiction that so distorts common sense thinking, you can write in one sentence how marijuana use steadily increased and then, with no hint of irony, in the same paragraph, point out how more people in emergency rooms had pot in their systems or admitted to smoking it in the past. It's an addiction that cannot be sustained without marijuana users, so the addictionologist must scare people about marijuana addicts to justify forcing them into rehab through the criminal justice system, which itself admits that one-third of the people sentenced to marijuana rehab haven't even used pot in the past 30 days. Again, it's that super potent pot that's so addictive, you can quit cold turkey for a month.
Now it's time to play Pass the Stash, where you can win cool prizes from Normal.
U.S. Drug Czar John Walters doesn't believe anybody is in jail for marijuana possession.
The fact is today, people don't go to jail for possession of marijuana. Finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn.
But the loveliest of them all was the unicorn. It was green.
Are you one of the Drug Czar's unicorns? Did you serve time for a first-time nonviolent marijuana possession charge? Tell us your story and you could win big. You can remain anonymous, and if we use your story on the podcast, you'll win a copy of the DVD Totally Baked, autographed by AC/DC's lead singer Brian Johnson, as well as excellent Normal swag like stickers and posters, and a steak dinner from Drug Czar John Walters. Steak dinner depends on whether the Drug Czar keeps his word, which isn't very likely.
We didn't arrest 800,000 marijuana users. That's the same lie I just talked to your colleague back there about.
Send us your email, I am a marijuana unicorn, to stash@normal.org today. Contest ends Friday, October 10th, 2008.
Don't you forget my unicorn.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid, and which claims are reefer madness? Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at cannabis science. Dr. Mitch, welcome back.
Great to be on the show.
You know, there's a kind of a running trend that we've seen in a lot of these reports about marijuana, its health effects. And one of the things we see coming back time and time again is relating the use of cannabis by adolescents to bouts of schizophrenia or any sort of mental disorder along those lines. This latest report that we've gotten here comes from the University of Nottingham. And I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about that study and what it says about cannabis use in adolescents.
This is a really intriguing paper that's out in schizophrenia research, and the bottom line on this is we're showing a subset of teens who have elevated scores on a schizotypal personality questionnaire if they're the ones who also happen to use cannabis heavily early in life. We've talked about this quite a bit before, but I just want to remind listeners of a couple of key facts here. The schizotypal personality questionnaire that they use as their dependent measure is something that I've shown in the past is biased against cannabis users in the first place. Some of the items could be misinterpreted by cannabis users as just using slang about cannabis, and unfortunately, some of these researchers think that this has something to do with some kind of psychotic symptom, making up your own words, or that kind of thing. The take-home message on that is just, even under those circumstances, even if the questionnaire isn't biased, we're still just looking at answers on a questionnaire. These aren't folks who ended up hospitalized for schizophrenia. We're not saying they even have a psychotic disorder. They're just a little bit deviant. And, I mean, what cannabis user wouldn't like to take on that identity a little bit? The take-home message, again, is we don't have uniform links between cannabis use early in life and this mild schizotypal personality questionnaire score. It's just a subset of folks who happen to have psychotics in their family who also seem to use cannabis heavily and get elevated scores on this questionnaire. So what started out as this giant overblown, oh, marijuana turns into schizophrenia, as we're refining the data more and more, we're discovering, in fact, folks who have psychotics in the family and who choose to use cannabis heavily early in life are a little bit weird.
Okay. And that itself hasn't been shown to go on to lead to the development of schizophrenia or any of these disorders in that way, just that this they've answered on this particular survey that they might get that way. Is that a good way to put it?
Exactly. And then the other thing I want to throw out is just nobody was randomly assigned to smoke pot here. For all we know, these were folks who turned to cannabis, in a sense, as a result of some of these deviant psychological experiences, if you will, and seemed to like it and chose to use it heavily, perhaps as a result of some of these earlier symptoms. The other thing that I've brought up in the past, and I know you interviewed my student Nicholas Von Damm on this topic as well, is just the use of hard drugs, in particular the stimulants. And they did their very best in trying to control for the use of alternative drugs to narrow down and see, is cannabis really the source on this? But I do want to caution folks that the biases inherent in fessing up to using cannabis are rather different from the biases inherent in fessing up to using hard drugs, particularly stimulants like methamphetamine and cocaine. So you can imagine a setting where you're perfectly comfortable saying you use cannabis, but not exactly, shall we say, willing to fess up to using cocaine or meth. I'm concerned with any kind of self-report measure like this that may be part of the issue. So although it doesn't look like the hard drugs are playing a big role in the psychotic symptoms in these folks, that may still be sort of haunting there, and particularly in light of data from my lab, I feel like use of hard drugs is essentially still an important factor to keep in mind. We don't have randomly assigned folks, and in truth, what's getting labeled psychotic here is really nothing more than perhaps somebody who's a little bit creative and a little bit odd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that would account for a large proportion of the cannabis users out there, I would think. I wonder why, and I don't know if you can even answer this, but I wonder why they continue to try to make this link or try to find this link between the use of cannabis use in adolescence and these schizophrenic or schizotypal type reactions, rather than just, you know, looking at the history. I mean, I guess maybe this is just a common sense thing from a guy who doesn't know much about the science or statistics of it, but I would think that if there was a huge problem with cannabis use association with schizophrenia, we would have seen an increase in schizophrenia as cannabis use has increased.
Well, and that's a splendid way of looking at these data. And when you look at different nations, particularly areas with different policies, we find the rate of schizophrenia is just under 1% in countries as diverse as the Netherlands and, you know, Asian countries where, you know, if you get caught with a joint, you get beaten with a stick, you know. So clearly we're not seeing the impact of policy on these mental health things. I'm not at all criticizing these researchers. I feel like this is an intriguing question. Some of the links between cannabis and various aspects of mental functioning are intriguing, and it's neat to think that the cannabinoids are involved. But as we're getting these studies to come out more and more, it's presented to us like, oh, this is a growing case, when in fact, as it's getting more and more refined, we're discovering the impact is actually pretty minor. When you look at when cannabis use started to go up in the late 60s, early 70s, mid 70s, we don't see any increase in rates of schizophrenia in areas in Australia, some that have you get a traffic ticket if you're busted, and others that have hard penalties for cannabis possession. We don't see different rates of schizophrenia. What people are looking for now is it maybe this earlier onset situation? Are these folks more likely to have their first psychotic break earlier in life? Other studies seem to be coming out in support of that. But as you know, Russ, the underlying meta message is often, so we need to keep cannabis illegal.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI crime reports are out today, and we're discovering that, in fact, arrest rates are higher than ever, and this has had no impact on age of onset of use, on rates of use, on the number of people who've chosen to use cannabis, on the number of people who develop cannabis-related problems. So clearly this, arrest and toss away the key and let's throw them in jail approach isn't really helping, even if there were a link between cannabis and some kind of mental disorder. And now, as this research is getting more and more refined, we're discovering if there is such a link, it's only for a small subset of folks who use cannabis early in life, and we're not really sure if that choice to use cannabis early in life was a product of the mental deviance or an actual creator of it.
Yeah, that was something I was thinking of too, is that even if we were to take these allegations at face value, this idea that somehow cannabis is going to cause problems for certain adolescents psychologically, we're talking about a very small subset, like you say, less than 1% of the people that display schizophrenia. We're talking about an even smaller, taking that and making it a smaller subset when we talk about the few number of young adolescents that actually end up using cannabis with any regularity. So it really seems like they're making a mountain out of a molehill with this.
Well, I feel like, supporting the idea that cannabis is only for adults is something I can really get behind. We do have data on deviant brain development, on decreases in IQ and stuff, and folks who are heavy users early in life, but only in heavy users early in life. And I like the idea of this is something that we want to have for adults and adults only. But I'm really worried when, people are going to take this, go into high schools and say, hey, don't smoke pot or you're going to be schizophrenic, when they've got, older siblings, cousins, friends who have been using cannabis without any negative consequences, and then they're not going to believe us when we, say the things that really do matter about the hard drugs.
Yeah, and like you had mentioned about the underlying theme here being that that's why we need to keep cannabis illegal, it kind of seems to me that's the same kind of logic that you'd say we can no longer have Snickers bars because there's a small subset of the population that's allergic to peanuts. I mean, we don't make things illegal just because a tiny, tiny population of them have a problem with it.
Exactly.
Well, we'll keep an eye on all of this schizophrenia and psychological research with respect to cannabis. We can re-emphasize our number one message, I would suppose, which is that adolescents shouldn't be using marijuana, period, whether these facts turn out to be true or not. But, because of all of the data that you've already collected, like you said, on the IQ scores and brain development. So kids, stay away. Wait till you're an adult. That's the time to use it.
I just want to add that I'll be elaborating on a number of these themes at the Normal Conference this year and do hope that as many listeners as possible can make it out there. We're really going to have a blast, and it's really going to be an informative time.
That's right. Normal Conference is October, third weekend of October. Check out the website at normal.org to pre-register, and we'll see you there, we hope. Dr. Mitch, thanks for joining us again here on our Cannabis Science Day.
Always a pleasure.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Happy Hemp Day Hump Day, Stashers. Today, we introduce Shane Papatelikas and his folky tune, I Can't Get High. It is a sweet love song of sorts about a guy losing the girl and things just not being the same. Shane grew up in New Hampshire as a roadie for his father's rock band. Shane's dad was a drummer and always had jazz, contemporary, and classic rock playing in the house. Shane was an English major at the University of New Hampshire when he began playing guitar and writing music. Shane developed a career, playing and songwriting, when he moved to San Francisco in 2000. He is currently working on a full LP with his dad on drums. You can hear more of this East meets West Coast troubadour by checking out Shane's MySpace page or his website, sptunes.com, for more of his music. We've got links to those up at our blog at stash.normal.org, where you can also get an MP3 download of this song. It's Shane Papatelikas with I Can't Get High.
Sunday evening and I'm stuck here again, waiting for the hours to turn. Not brokenhearted, hurt or humiliated, ain't got no lessons to learn. Predictably I sit here thinking of you, with a blue pen and a white page. Maybe some words will find a new definition, saying I'm in need of a change. I'm in need of change. See, I used to get high at the end of the day, and I used to get high at times ticking away, and I used to get high, nothing to lose. Now I can't get high, can't get high. Days come to pass and the nights tend to last much longer than they should. Hear that last call and I fill up my glass, one more to make me feel good. When I get home, all the blankets are cold, don't wanna turn out my lights. These walls are tired and the silence is old, let your picture make it all right. Make it all right. See, I used to get high end of the day, and I used to get high. At times ticking away, and I used to get high. Nothing to lose, now I can't get high. Can't get high. And you see, I wrote a thousand words today, still couldn't paint a picture of you. And inspiration seems like another bird, just trying to fly without wings. Eyes open slowly, sunshine coming inside, falling down onto my head. Newspaper stories and a slow cup of coffee might get me out of my bed. But I'm not ready to start up this day, and I'm much too tired to sleep. Springtime in Paris, getting caught in the rain, it's right where I need to be. Get high at the end of the day, and I used to get high. At times ticking away, and I used to get high. Nothing to lose, now I can't get high. Can't get high. Said I used to day and I used to get high. That time ticking away and I used to get high. With nothing to lose, now I can't get high. Can't get high, I can't get high without you. I can't get high without you. I can't get high without you. I can't get high without you.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America. And it's all because of your support. Take some time to join Normal at www.normalnorml.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join Normal today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
Bob Forrest in the studio. Paul Armentano, the senior policy analyst for Normal, on the phone. Paul.
Yes.
So, tell me about the presidential candidate. Are they going to continue to pursue a war on drugs, both of them, either of them?
I'll tell you, in answering that question, let me first just say, I'm speaking as Paul Armentano, the individual, because Normal, as a nonprofit organization, actually can't endorse particular candidates or one party over another.
Got it.
But, speaking from my own personal point of view, I got to tell you, I think it's pretty bleak, when you're
for both of them.
Particularly, if you're going to talk about the two major parties, the Coke versus Pepsi candidates, you've got Obama on the one hand who, has some admitted personal experience with illicit substances and several years ago did make some statements favorable to the decriminalization of marijuana for adults. That would be a law like California's law that says the marijuana would be confiscated by police but the person wouldn't be arrested, they'd pay a fine. But then as a presidential candidate, he backed off that statement and said, in fact, he doesn't really support decriminalization anymore, even though 12 states have enacted such a law and 75% of the American public says they support it. He backed off as a candidate. His vice presidential candidate, Joe Biden, I mean, this guy's the modern architect of the drug war. He sponsored mandatory minimum legislation in the mid-80s for drug crimes. He's one of the reasons we have a 100-to-1 sentencing ratio for crack cocaine versus powder cocaine. This guy brought random drug testing to the workplace. He sponsored the RAVE Act. He's the reason that low-level drug offenders can now be charged as co-conspirators under federal law. I mean, there's not a more ardent drug warrior in Congress, nor has there been, than Joe Biden. So I don't see a lot of hope there. And then, of course, on the McCain-Palin side, McCain, while he hasn't been a sponsor of this legislation during his 26 years in the Senate, he certainly voted in favor of more strict penalties for drug offenders. He supports the death penalty for certain drug offenders, for instance.
Wow.
And his running mate, she doesn't have a particularly long record on drug policy. She doesn't have much of a record at all, but I will say she's the governor of one of a handful of states that does have legal medical marijuana, and I am unaware of her as governor speaking out against the use of medical marijuana or trying to in any way disrupt that program. So at least, unlike her partner McCain, she has some familiarity with medical marijuana. McCain denies there is such a thing as medical marijuana. Obama has talked in a mildly favorable manner about marijuana, but I've got to tell you, during the Democrat National Convention, this issue wasn't even discussed, and I find that shocking. According to the FBI, we arrested over 1.8 million Americans last year on drug crimes, many of them young people, many of them African Americans and other minorities. A disproportionate amount of them were Yet this party's not even talking about it. As I told your producer earlier, you know, had Barack Obama, who admitted to using cocaine in his youth, had he been arrested and prosecuted under the very law that his vice presidential candidate sponsored and passed in the 80s, his political aspirations would be being Barry the janitor. They wouldn't be running for president of the United States. Yet that's somehow not an issue in this country, and I think that's really unfortunate.
Paul, can I ask you something about this, the decriminalization in California? That's what I was trying to get at, is that normal going at the federal level I don't know how much effort, how much you're going to get at the federal level, but at the state level, if you went state by state, like how it seems to be here in California, you'd have much better success, don't you think? And is that what you guys are trying to do?
No, I agree wholeheartedly. And the majority of our legislative efforts are put in the state and local campaigns for the very reason you're talking
mm-hmm.
about. There will be a vote in Massachusetts to decriminalize marijuana in November. There will be a vote in Michigan to legalize the medical use of marijuana under a physician's recommendation in that state. There will be several local, what we call deprioritization initiatives, which mandate that local law enforcement make marijuana law possession enforcement by adults their lowest priority. Those are the efforts that we...
Yeah, that's where you're going. Really,
and that's what we move forward with.
That's what I'm saying. Of these 872,000 pot arrests, how many in California, do you know?
I don't know, because the state data comes out several months after the federal data. But it is safe to say that the majority of these arrests, according to the FBI, actually took place in the Midwest. I think only about 29% of the total arrests took place on the West Coast. I think that is in large part because many states in the West Coast, like Oregon, like California, have decriminalized, whereas mm-hmm. in the Midwest, most states have not.
It's the culture war. It's just writ large.
Marijuana.
Can I bring it's a slightly different topic up here, but that is these medical marijuana clinics. I don't think they are...
Not for glaucoma and AIDS
patients. I don't think they're helping your case, I got to tell you. The at least not in California. These clinics are...
The anxiety. Well, they're treating kids for anxiety.
No, they're an abomination because they're seeing clinicians, they're seeing licensed professionals who are not even doing the most cursory practice of medicine or nursing. They just rubber stamp and hand people a license to get them.
Agreed, Drew, and certainly that's not a situation anyone wants. For whatever reason, it seems to be a situation fairly unique to Los Angeles.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, really?
Well, you know what that probably means? That probably means that somebody's making a bunch of money off
that's
these things.
It.
And somebody's
certainly.
Running.
I mean, there are dispensaries. The way dispensaries work in California, it's really a county by county issue, and there have been counties that have tried to cap the number of dispensaries. For instance, Alameda County, close to where I live here in Oakland, capped the number at 4. The sort of places that you're talking about in L.A. that advertise in the alt-weeklies,
right. Yeah.
You know, they don't only draw concern among the population who lives near them, they draw concern among reformers like us.
Good, because that's good to hear.
They do seem to be unique to Southern California.
All right. Well,
particularly
that's
L.A. You don't see them in Orange County.
Right. Well, that's good to hear, because it's just horrible practice of medicine. And if something's going to help somebody, I don't care. And there's no such thing as a bad drug. There's just things that get triggered by drugs that are bad. And so if something helps somebody, whatever. But to think that they've seen a doctor, if somebody believes they've had an evaluation, and who knows what could have been missed. Well, we do know, because we see these people later when they have all kinds of psychiatric problems that were completely, not only just undiagnosed, just unattended to completely, and made quite a bit worse sometimes by the interaction with the healthcare provider. And that's, I know, not your intent, and that so bad medicine really troubles me.
Right, but, and people should have a relationship with their physician, and if their physician believes that marijuana would help them for a clinical diagnosis, then obviously, and there are many, as you know, and we've talked about many diseases where marijuana, I believe, can help, whether it's symptomatic relief or whether it's even potentially modifying the actual disease. And we would hope ultimately, and our goal ultimately, would be to bring marijuana into the pharmacopoeia where it once was, and take it out of Schedule One under federal law so that we don't have this sort of ad hoc policy where one county deals with it one way and another county deals with it a separate way and another state deals with it in another manner. But in fact, people go to their doctor, they have a discussion about marijuana therapy, and their doctor can actually prescribe them marijuana in a manner no different than if their doctor was to prescribe them morphine or Xanax.
Right. I had a, this here's where it fits in my little lexicon. I had a woman, you even treated her with me. She was a horrible, horrible poly drug addict her whole life, but was all of a sudden able to control it. I couldn't figure out how, and she wasn't in the program. Turned out she was smoking crap loads of pot, and she had no life, but then she got breast cancer, she started dying. And she had no money and no way to get the pot. I thought, let's prescribe it. I mean, by all means, you're dying, you want to feel better, this has been working for you. Why in the world would I withhold that from you? It makes no sense. And she didn't need opiates during that time because of it. Hmm. I mean, you know, and so that's, that, if you don't know how it sort of fits for me, I mean, that's where it would be like, oh my God, that is helping somebody who is not interested in recovery for whom that drug had a great benefit. So,
sure, and we've seen this most recently. There were three clinical trials that came out of the University of California system, one at Davis, one in San Francisco, one in San Diego, showing that inhaled marijuana can dramatically treat neuropathic pain. And as you're probably familiar
with
that condition, opiates are not a particularly good analgesic to treat neuropathic pain.
Very true.
And yet we're finding that marijuana, and in some cases marijuana as an adjunct analgesic in combination with opiates, well, seems to work quite well.
And you know, both Bob and my hair are staying blue because we're fearful that our addicts will use this discussion as a justification for their ongoing use, which they do all the time, and that's the way addiction works.
But marijuana maintenance.
Marijuana maintenance. Well, I'm not advocating that. But yes, we need lots more research on the CB1 and the CB2 receptor. We need to understand this system, and yes, there should be much more.
I don't think they understand the correlation between depression and marijuana withdrawal either.
It's all very complicated. But, Paul, we've got to say farewell to you. Thank you for joining me. I hope you'll join me again soon.
State by state. Paul.
But just before you sign off, I'm not sure I heard clearly which candidate has the...
Sounds like Biden's the enemy.
Yeah, sounds like Biden was the worst.
Yeah, you know, I think I have some hope that Barack Obama takes a more holistic approach to this issue as opposed to seeing this as a morally black and white issue.
So he'll re-entrench in his previous sort of philosophy about this, what you're saying. And as
I'm
such,
saying that he may take a broader, more philosophical view toward dealing with drug use as a health issue as opposed to a criminal issue.
Got it.
But I'm not holding my breath that will be the case, but I don't see really any chance that McCain would take that approach. And I think that, as a nation, really is the approach that we need to take.
Thanks, Paul.
It's a health issue. It's not a criminal
issue. I appreciate you coming on. I hope you come back again soon.
Will do.
All right, take care.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes, this one from activist and actor Woody Harrelson, who said, quote, "I do smoke, but I don't go through all this trouble just because I want to make my drug of choice legal. It's about personal freedom. We should have the right in this country to do what we want if we don't hurt anybody. 72 million people in this country have smoked pot, 18 to 20 million in the last year. These people should not be treated as criminals," end quote. Absolutely true, except for the fact that since you said that, Woody, the numbers have gone way up. Almost 100 million people now admit in America to having smoked pot at least once in their life. We here at Normal are dedicated to making sure that none of them are treated like criminals. Thanks for downloading the Daily Audio Stash. We'll see you tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.